T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Richmond Weaver and Lonzo here, the final hour on ESPN Upstate, The Huddle. Greg McKinney, GMAC, is on vacation, so it's Lonzo and I, and we're watching intently here as England has a 1-0 lead over Croatia. And if you've missed it in the past, I picked Croatia to win the World Cup, and Lonzo picked England, so we're going head-to-head here. We got a lot of pride, and GMAC picked Belgium, and he lost his team quickly yesterday as France heads into the final with a victory over Belgium. Lonzo, are you getting nervous that Croatia might make a run here?
You know, I know how this is going to come across, but I'm used to picking winners, so this is not really a surprise for me.
And I guess you're going to say that it's coming across as arrogance.
You said it, not me. I consider it confidence. So
cockiness.
Nah, just confidence.
Arrogance, but it's confidence.
Believe that you're meant to be there. You know, that type of thing. England's going all the way. England's going to win the entire thing.
Well, it would be a good story. Obviously, England has not won the World Cup since 1966, so it's been a long time that they've been in position. And I don't think they've been in the finals since 1994, 1990, somewhere around in there. Regardless, it's been a long time since England has been there. So of all things, if England does win, I will have to suck up my pride and realize that I was wrong and Lonzo is right. And he can still be arrogant and confident, whatever you want to term it. But it would be a great story if England does win.
Whatever you want to term it, I'll just be the winner. I'm good with that. I'm used to that. I'm all right.
Okay. If you're not first, you're last, right? All right. So let's get to 3 o'clock, the three questions at 3.
All right. So normally GMAC writes most of these, and he purposefully tries to make me stumble. I don't know if you caught that yet.
Yes.
But he is doing that on purpose. And I just rewrote all the questions, and then I got lazy and I stopped doing it, and he knew I wasn't doing it. So he's been throwing things in there to mess me up. And I don't think that you would do that, but I am proofreading something that I need to do more often. You know what? Even if I wrote the questions, I still should be proofreading, because you never know when you make a mistake.
Of course, yes. Especially if I'm typing up the questions, you definitely need to be proofreading them. But, I promise you.
But I appreciate the larger font size and the bigger sentences or questions. All right. Question number one. There's 50 days until college football starts. What are you most looking forward to this season?
Well, and this is going off of ESPN, just had an article, 50 days, 50 voices, and what we're looking forward to in 2018. So we're going to explore a little bit of that, but I wanted to get our take on what we're most looking forward to this season. And as a Clemson fan, it's easy to say I'm looking forward to what's going to happen in the quarterback position, what's going to happen between Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. But in all honesty, that's not what I'm most looking forward to. I'm actually most looking forward to seeing, can that defense actually be as dominant as people are predicting? With all of those guys coming back, I've seen where these expectations get so high and they're at a level where the performance doesn't live up to the expectation. So that's what I'm looking forward to most, outside of, I'm just looking forward to college football starting. That's really what I'm most looking forward to, regardless of what happens. But if I'm pinning it down and being very specific about Clemson, and again, outside of wanting to see them win, I'm anxious to see how that defense plays.
Well, I'm one of those guys that some people don't understand, because I have two favorite teams. But I have many personalities, so, I mean, everything's covered that way. You know where you live, but remember where you come from. So there's a couple things I'm looking forward to. As far as South Carolina goes, I'm looking forward to seeing Deebo Samuel staying healthy and seeing what he can do for an entire season. Because what he did in the couple games that he played had people talking Heisman already. And I don't think that was a horrible thing to say. I don't think it was far-fetched because he was the Gamecocks at first. I mean,
no, he was. He was explosive.
He was everything.
He was it.
But if Good can come out of an injury, Good came out of this injury because South Carolina had to learn how to win without him. Now, and they did. They won without him. Now, what can they do with him? And I just, you know, I pray that he stays healthy the entire season, and I think he's going to make so much more of a difference. And I think the difference he makes is if he was with that team, they may have won one or two more games. And the games that they won that were close would have been a lot bigger score. The other thing that I'm looking forward to as far as for the Ohio State Buckeyes is what will the new quarterback do? I mean, we've had the three quarterbacks for so many years, and now a different guy's coming in.
And this is a brand new name, brand new face, basically.
Yeah, well, he played some last year, but compared to the carousel and all that we did, especially the championship year with the three quarterbacks, and you know, something that hasn't really been done before, the fact that they had to play three and all three won. Ohio State, they managed. They are an elite team. I'm not just saying that because they're my team. They are an elite team, and they reload. And I want to see what happens, what this new quarterback – I mean, this would be technically – this is an Urban Meyer quarterback. So I want to see what happens.
Yes, it is.
If I recall, I can't remember if he was around to recruit the other guys. I don't think he was. So I think we're getting into his guys big time. He's going to win no matter where he is. He's that good of a coach. But I want to see what this new quarterback does and what Ohio State's able to do this year.
I like it.
All right, question number two. The Golden State Warriors have won three out of the last four NBA titles and continue to sign big-name free agents like Boogie Cousins. Is the Warriors' dominance bad for the NBA? You know, we touched on this a little bit last hour. No, the Warriors' dominance is not bad for the NBA. You need a bad guy. You need a villain. You need a foil. You need something to aspire to. And there's nothing better than having someone that's so dominant or a team that's so dominant in a sport, which we saw cracks last year. So we know that there are some vulnerabilities. That is a hard word to say. I can say it in my head. So there are cracks in their armor. This could be the year when they fall. And everyone loves a hero story or someone who makes it to the top, but people really love when that person falls. I'm not one of those guys. When people get to the top, I like seeing them stay there, except in this case because I can't stand Golden State, and I can't wait till they fall. And unfortunately, it's not going to be LeBron who does it. I think Houston's got the best shot, especially if they're able to pick up a Carmelo Anthony, which I think would help them also. So, I think I'm good with Golden State being there. You need a villain. You need a good team. It just shows how good a team can be starting from the ground up and then adding pieces. Still can't stand someone who's a traitor and a front runner and went over there and should be the villain. But all that aside, yes, I'm okay with them.
You're okay with
yes.
it. Yes. And I agree with you. I'm okay with it as well. It is not bad for the NBA that there is a true villain, so to speak, in terms of what they've been able to do over the past 4 years and be the team that everybody is striving for. And don't be mad at the Warriors because of how they built their team. Now, remember, it was through the draft. Only Kevin Durant was the guy that came over, but good for them. Hey, they were able to go out there and recruit Kevin Durant and bring him over. They won championships without Kevin Durant, so it's not like it was only Kevin Durant that came in and created this dominance for the Warriors. Remember, I mean, they were 73-9, but isn't that what we loved about that season is that the Warriors were so dominant, but guess what happened? The Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James came in and knocked them off their throne at the moment when nobody expected that they would be able to do that in Game 7 on the road. And that's what made the story even better. But it wouldn't have been that great if it wasn't a situation where the Warriors were so dominant at the time that it was almost inevitable that people just wanted to give them the trophy that year. Yeah, just go ahead and give it to them. And just like what we're doing now, it seems that People want to hand the trophy right back to Golden State each year because they think they're so dominant. But remember, this year, Houston Rockets were up 3-2. And if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, it could be in a completely different situation. And it's Houston and Cleveland playing for the NBA championship instead of the Golden State Warriors. But I'm in agreement with you. It is not bad that the Warriors are quote-unquote dominant in the NBA.
See, something else, just a little follow-up. I wonder if Kevin Durant never goes to Golden State, is LeBron still a Cavalier? Because there's a chance that they win another championship. Because Kevin Durant was the difference the next year, for sure.
Oh, he was.
Golden State, and
yes,
is the difference right now. I mean, they're still a great team, but he pushes them somewhere where they couldn't have gotten to on their own. All right, question number three. Vulnerability. See, I did
vulnerability.
It.
Vulnerability.
See, I had to work on it. All right.
Enunciation.
I had to slow it down.
You're getting
a
better.
Bit. Yeah. The Braves fell one game behind the Philadelphia Phillies after losing last night to the Toronto Blue Jays and have now lost six out of their last 10 games. Will the Braves be back in first place in the NL East before the All-Star break?
Well, we know the All-Star break is coming up fast. The Braves only have four games left before the All-Star break, and they're now sitting one game squarely behind the Philadelphia Phillies. And if you look at what the Braves have coming up, can they at least go 500, go 2-2 out of the next four games, and hopefully that the Phillies will fall to some degree? And I'm just not certain that that's going to happen. And I think right now with Arizona coming up after this series with Toronto, that the Braves are going to have a tough time staying in first place. But that doesn't mean that their season is all of a sudden over just because they fall out of first place before the All-Star break, because we didn't expect that in the first place. So to answer the question, I do not think that they're going to be back in first place in the NL East before the All-Star break. But it doesn't mean that they can't recapture it further on down the season.
Yeah, you know what? I'm of two minds on this thing. I, as far as do I think they'll be back? No. Is that a good or a bad thing? Before the All-Star break, I do think that the Braves will get back into winning afterwards. But is it better motivation for them to get back to first place before the All-Star break, or is it better for them to be behind going into the All-Star break? I think it would be better for them to be behind because then they would have something to work on and work towards. I think if they get back to first, they're like, well, we've been there all year. See, this is where we're supposed to be. I think you lose hunger that way. So I think it would be better so they would have things to work on. But I do think they'll be back eventually.
Yeah, I think they'll be back eventually as well. I just don't think it's going to be before the All-Star break. And I'm under the mindset, though, that if they can get back to first place before the All-Star break, I think that actually gives them extra motivation because they did something that nobody would have ever guessed that they would have been able to do to be in first place in the NL East before the All-Star break. When we come back right here on The Huddle, we're going to hear some voices out there in college football in terms of what they're looking forward to in 2018. What is Coach Saban looking forward to? What is Coach Sweeney looking forward to? What about Kirk Herbstreit? 50 days before the college football season, what are they looking forward to in 2018? That's next, right here on The Huddle. ESPN Upstate, it's Richmond Weaver and Lonzo. Richmond Weaver and Lonzo here today. We're down one. Greg McKinney is out on vacation, so we're running you through this Wednesday hump day, and right now 65, almost 66 minutes into the match in World Cup action. England is still on top of Croatia 1-0, and looks like we've got a player for England that was hurt. Looks like he's getting taken off the field there. Didn't look too good for him there.
I couldn't tell if it was a tweaked knee or a groin shot. Could have been both. Maybe a groin shot that caused a tweaked knee.
Yes, exactly.
It would do that. Yeah.
That would definitely do that. Now, if you want to jump in the show, 844-477-3776, you can do that, or 844-GSP-ESPN. And also the text line is 71307. And make sure you use the keyword ESPN at the beginning of your text so we know it will be directed towards us. And We've got a Gamecock fan texted in saying his expectations. He believes the Gamecocks can get to 10 to 11 wins this year. It's crazy to me that everyone thinks that we will get less. I expect at least 9, if not more. Okay, so I think that's a resounding theme for Gamecock fans right now, is the expectations that we need to get to 10 or 11 wins.
Well, I completely agree. If you look at the schedule, the two games for sure, that's the two toughest ones is Georgia and Clemson. So, I mean, everybody else, you got to believe that they're in every single game, and I still think they got a shot at Georgia. And who knows about Clemson at the end of the year? Clemson thing right now is mental. It really is. Clemson is a better team, but the Gamecocks just haven't showed up like they have in the past, the last couple of years. So hopefully they'll at least show up this year.
Yeah, and when you look at that schedule, Georgia at home, September 8th. You've got Texas A&M at home, October 13th. And then you are on the road at Clemson. I mean, those are your three toughest games. But at home against Marshall, home against Coastal Carolina should be wins. You're on the road against Kentucky, and talking about mental, that could be a mental game for South Carolina right now as well, just for whatever reason. They just don't respond and play well against Kentucky. You've got Missouri at home. You've got Tennessee at home. And then the other one on the road, the other two on the road, you've got Ole Miss on the road, and you've got Florida on the road. So from an SEC's perspective, I mean, you got to be looking at a South Carolina team that should have real high expectations based on the way the schedule falls right there. And again, I do believe that South Carolina is going to give Georgia a true run for their money on September 8th. And it wouldn't surprise me if South Carolina actually wins that game. Now, I don't necessarily mean that that will identify South Carolina is going to be the SEC champion.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you while you were talking, but I thought you would want to know.
I do. Of course I want to know.
That Croatia has just scored a goal, so it is now tied 1-1 in the World Cup in the 69th minute. This thing will have extra minutes because of injury time, for sure. They were down like 6 minutes a little bit earlier with a guy being down. So far from over, but it's
far
tied.
Far from over, so you're telling me there's a chance. Croatia is making a comeback here. And I would have to say it happens quickly.
It does.
They scored and they're back at it again. There's none of this, all right, let's regroup, let's have the, you know, kick at midfield. None of that. It's they get right back at the action. I do at least like that. I don't know how they scored. Was you had to be watching.
I got to admit, I didn't see it. I was so enthralled by what you were saying. I was watching you talk, and then I looked over and saw after the replay was done. So I didn't get to see the goal.
That's how fast the World Cup action is. You just never know, and that's why I would have to agree. A lot of fans, they love it because it can happen in a split second like that. You can have a score. Now all of a sudden, this game has completely changed, obviously, now that we're tied. I mean, and it looked like England was in control, and next thing you know, here we go.
There's still at least 25 minutes left in this game. And if it stays tied, we know what happens after that. So,
yeah, we have overtime after that.
We go to the penalty kicks or whatever they're called. I forget what they're called, but, you know.
Well, they do go to a 30-minute overtime. Well, they go 15 minutes, and then if it's still tied, then they go to another 15 minutes. And then at that point, that's when they would have the, I guess, quote-unquote shootout.
Well, shootout. If it stays tied, I'm rooting for the shootout just because it's so exciting.
Oh, I agree. I think it's one of the great things in all of sports and obviously in soccer. I love that aspect about the soccer matches that they can go to those shootouts. I do love that.
Oh, man. He just hit the post. Dude, that was in there.
Tough one for Croatia. I needed that one. I need to take this win. I need the pride of my team continuing on. And when I say my team, the only reason they're my team is that I picked Croatia to win, not because I have any type of allegiance towards Croatia.
Well, you're unaware of the penalty for the new guy winning, right?
Here we go.
I can't disclose what it is yet.
Yes.
So because this game isn't over. Yeah, but if I were you, I would hope that you lose. I'm
yes.
just saying.
Okay. Well, I'm not so certain about that. I think you're just trying to fake me out. I still want Croatia to win. So continuing with the expectations for South Carolina and what they look like, as I mentioned earlier, Phil Steele has his magazine out. It's the College Football Preview. And he also talked about what expectations are, his predictions are, but even more so, looking at South Carolina and Will Muschamp and his ability to be a good coach and what that means for South Carolina, because there's a lot of people that did question Will Muschamp being hired and probably still have questions in terms of what he can do for the long term for South Carolina. It's still early on. We've seen some improvement. We're starting to see a situation where he's doing a lot of things from the recruiting standpoint and being much more competitive. And obviously, and I'm saying relative to Clemson and what he needs to be able to do in state and making sure that not everybody is, you know, he's losing out on to a lot of players too. Clemson, and I think he's starting to take strides with that. And here's Phil Steele talking about Will Muschamp and what he likes about Will Muschamp.
I think towards the end of the Steve Spurrier era, I don't know if the recruiting was necessarily all there, and I think Will Muschamp has come in with the attitude. He's bringing in the recruits. Now, he hasn't had overly experienced teams, but he's got one this year. He's got my number 29 most experienced team in the country. Getting those two key players is back. I like what I see out of the defense. I think it's huge. And if you go back to the days when Muschamp was at Florida, he wasn't necessarily a bad coach. He kept losing his quarterbacks, had a bunch of injury-plagued outfits. And, you know, so I think he is a solid head coach.
And I would agree with him. I think he's a solid head coach. I think the jury is still out on him. I think he's got some more years to prove his worth. But I think he's taken the necessary steps based on where he inherited the program. And I think there probably was a situation where, was Steve Spurrier, was he checked out for a couple of years? And was he putting the effort into what needed to be done at a major Division I college football program, especially in the SEC? And we know what he was able to do, getting South Carolina to two straight 11-win seasons and winning five games against the in-state rival Clemson. So we know there can be a lot of success at South Carolina, but was the effort there going into his last, you know, 18 to 24 months? I'm not certain that it really was there. And I think Will Muschamp might have had taken over a situation that wasn't as full as some people had really thought.
Well, definitely he took over a rebuilding job, and that's what he's done. He's been rebuilding. And, you know, expectations had changed for Carolina, and they started going back the other direction really quick, even under Spurrier, because there was a losing mentality there for so many years. Spurrier changed that, but then he started letting it go back to normal. I don't know if he just got tired of fighting it or what, but it started to go back. And Will Muschamp, a lot of people were unhappy with his hiring, but I think he's done really well, and he's got a shot to do even better. I just think this year is going to be a really, really good year.
Yeah, and I think that's the sentiments from a lot of people right now, is that the expectations are high. They want to see that true next step. And so the question would also be, from a South Carolina standpoint, is, as we're looking at 50 days until college football is here, it's right around the corner. And once you get now past July 4th, we're really getting close to it. And August will be here before you know it. But looking at their schedule and what those expectations can be, is 9 wins enough? Is it a foregone conclusion that it has to be 10 or 11 wins before you have a successful season? And what does that do in terms of now, how would Will Muschamp be viewed if he could get to 10 or 11 wins?
How is 9 wins not enough? I mean, especially if you get 9 wins and you win a bowl game, and it's a good bowl game. I mean, the win over Michigan, however Michigan is, really, they are perceived to be what they used to be again. They're not there yet. So it is a big deal that Carolina was able to come back last year and beat them. So if you win 9 games and you're competitive in the couple that you lose, you're competitive if you lose to Georgia, but you're competitive, you lose to Clemson and you're competitive, and you win your bowl game and you end up with a 10-win season, how is that not good?
It's hard for me to argue that. I think that is good. But that's not where a lot of fans are. There's those fans that's not good enough. That's not where their expectations are. They want SEC championships. And I get that because at a point, I wanted ACC championships for Clemson. And I couldn't have ever dreamed as far as a national championship for Clemson.
I want SEC championships too for the Gamecocks, but how many do they have? So, I mean, this is still new territory.
Of course, it is. Yes.
Even with Spurrier's teams, as good as they were, I mean, you know, what they won the East once, I think.
It's hard to win a conference championship, a national
championship. Especially as long as Alabama's still there.
Exactly. That's the biggest factor that's impeding a lot of people right now in the Southeast is Nick Saban. And what does Nick Saban have to say about what he's looking forward to in 2018? We are going to get to that, and that's next right here on ESPN Upstate. You're listening to The Huddle. It's Richmond Weaver and Lonzo. It is Wednesday here on The Huddle, hump day. Greg McKinney is out on vacation, so it's Richmond Weaver and Lonzo taking you through to the 4 o'clock hour. Then Straight Up with Sturge will follow us. And looking at right now, 50 days until college football. What does that look like? And we asked this at the 3 o'clock hour and 3 questions at 3. What are we most looking forward to in 2018? And this was based on ESPN just put out an article talking about that. And they had 50 different people chime in, all the way from Nick Saban to Dabo Swinney, Kirk Herbstreit, Christian Wilkins, Greg McElroy, analyst. We've got Larry Fedora, North Carolina coach. We've got all types of people. And Alabama coach Nick Saban says, every season presents a new set of challenges, and that's what makes it fun. That's what keeps me going. Everybody always asks me, what keeps you going? Well, every team and every season is a challenge, and it doesn't matter what you did last year. It's all about what you do with the guys you've got this year, and that's what excites me every year at this time. It's what comes next. We know what's coming next for Alabama. They're going to be loaded. They're going to be sitting in a situation where their expectations are extremely high, and can they live up to those expectations? And I know that we talk about other teams in terms of their fan base and the expectations and what's realistic and what's not. I would have to say the one fan base that probably is very skewed has to be Alabama because of their dominance over the past years. And it is almost national championship or bust. And I think that's what you saw the year in 2016 when Clemson beats Alabama to win the national championship. Then it was such motivation that it was everything that they had to go for was coming up into that semifinal game in 2017 against Clemson, is that was the biggest thing that was on their plate, to a point where I felt that it could be a situation that's why there was a little bit of letdown and they played very sluggish in that national championship game against Georgia, because their true goal was to upend Clemson because of what Clemson had did to them the previous year. And I think that's somewhat of the high expectations that those type of fans have at Alabama. Now, what does Clemson coach Dabo Swinney, what does he have to say? He's quoted as saying, "We have the most experienced returning team since I have been the head coach at Clemson, with 61 lettermen and 17 starters coming back. With that type of experience, I am most excited to see the competition we will have at each position. So I'm excited for the very beginning of practice in August." 17 starters coming back. That is quite a bit. And so we know there's going to be some high expectations regarding that. If you want to jump in, 844-477-3776 right here before we end at 4 o'clock. And also the text line is 71307. And make sure you use the keyword ESPN. And let's go to the phone lines right now. We've got Billy wanting to talk football. Billy, what's your expectations this year?
Hey, Richmond, listen, I think expectations can change even within a season. We're seeing that right now with Atlanta and baseball. I mean, just look at South Carolina and Clemson this year. Let's I'm not saying any of these are going to happen, but let's just say that they did. Let's say Clemson went down to A&M and lost their first game, or that South Carolina beat Georgia in their second game. I think that would instantly probably lower expectations somewhat for Clemson and probably raise them somewhat for South Carolina. I think in most seasons, everybody's talking about Alabama Clemson right now, and I get that. Listen, they're right, but everyone needs to remember that they're at the apex, even in Alabama's case, they're at the apex of their program right now. And you can argue that they're the best program in college football history. So these things historically can't continue forever. They're just not going to. There is going to be a downturn in both of those programs. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be this year or it's going to be next year, but it will happen. And it probably will happen within the next 5 years. Anyway, realistically, looking at it from South Carolina's standpoint, most seasons, I'm not going to say this season, you play, 12 games, you've got three gimmies outside of the schedule most of the year, outside of the SEC, and then you've got three or four gimmies within the SEC now. That's just the way it is in all of college football. That means you've got six wins. Let's say you've got two that you can't win most seasons, so that's, 6-2. Well, then you've got four games, Richmond, if you split those games, you should win eight games. I think every year – things have changed in Columbia. I think every year that South Carolina fans should expect to win at least 7 or 8 games every year. This year, I'm going to say 8. If they win more than that, I'll be happy. If they win less than that, I'll be unhappy. I think they can probably win 9 or 10, to be honest. But things happen that you can't foresee. So I'm going to say 8-4 and hope that they do better. Anyway, I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate it, buddy.
Billy, thank you, sir. Another great call. And he makes very valid points in terms of, based on how things happen during the season, there can be a change of expectations. Now, in college football, because the season is so short and we know that it's limited, if there's any falters, you're almost out of any situation, especially if you lose two games, you're done in terms of looking at an opportunity for playing for a national championship. But with that being said, having those type of expectations for South Carolina, as Billy said, 8 wins, that's very realistic. I even think that that's probably underestimating or under expectations for South Carolina. I would fully expect that 9-10 wins should be very realistic for South Carolina based on what we've seen in terms of what has happened. Now, that's in a vacuum. So to Billy's point, anything can change. Obviously, look at what happened last year. Who knows what would have happened, as you mentioned, Lonzo, with the injuries with Dowell and with Debo Samuel. That could have made a 1 or 2 game difference in terms of wins and losses.
Well, I think you should, if you're a Gamecock fan, you should look at it and think 9 for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you should. We know that's not true. I mean, there are no absolute givens. There are. Think about Kentucky. I mean, the struggles with Kentucky. Struggles that should not have happened and may continue to happen. There's just... It's cool that we're so close because we're going to find out here pretty soon. But the anticipation is going to grow and grow and grow. And think of how quickly your team could be out of it. You know, week two, it could be over.
And that's college football. Yes, the realistic situation that your season could be done before you really even get to mid-October. I'm not saying that you're not going to win any more games. I'm just saying if your expectation is playing for a national championship or a conference championship, they could be dashed pretty quickly. All right, when we come back, was LeBron James trolling people in Culver City, California yesterday? That's next, right here on The Huddle. It's Richmond Weaver and Lonzo. Continuing here on The Huddle, last segment, and it's really getting tense now, Lonzo. Extra time in World Cup, and we've got England and Croatia.
Now we're going to find out who's
tied.
In shape.
Yes,
who's
we
really
are.
Who's really in shape?
Who's really in shape? Is it going to be Harry Kane and England, or is it going to be Luka Modric and Croatia? And we've got the coin toss right now. Looks like yeah, it's hard to tell. I didn't see that happened so fast. It might have been England that won the toss there. But extra time, we'll see what happens. And I'm hoping I want to go to a shootout. I want to see some real excitement.
Winning the toss. What's that really mean in soccer?
I mean, so you're going to get the ball.
You get to control the ball.
You get
ball.
To control
I
mean, the...
Yeah, I mean, the ball seems to change so quick in
well,
soccer.
It does, but...
I don't think that matters.
It probably doesn't, but... At least you can get on offense first. And
it's not like winning the toss in football.
I mean, I guess obviously not.
I guess it's like winning the jump ball.
That's about it. Yeah, that's a good equivalent or analogy, I should say. And speaking of jump ball and basketball, there were hundreds of fans hoping to see the new Los Angeles Lakers player LeBron James on Tuesday at a Culver City pizza. Blaze Pizza. Have you ever heard of it, Lonzo?
I have not.
Okay. Well, LeBron had tweeted out yesterday that after Blaze Pizza made a tweet saying, "Are you ready, Los Angeles, for the king of all pizza parties? We're celebrating King James' arrival in Los Angeles with free pizzas on July 10th. Stop by any of our LA locations between 2 to 5 p.m. for your free pie." And then LeBron retweeted that with a quote saying, "Haven't been to a pizza party in a minute," with the emoji con of, Culver City, ? So that led hundreds of fans to think that LeBron James was coming to the Culver City Blaze Pizza outlet, which unfortunately they were very disappointed because he did not show.
Now, do we know if LeBron has interests or flat out owns this pizza chain?
It's a great question. In a report on ESPN through the Associated Press, James is an investor in the pizza chain.
So all those people show up for free pizza. Maybe they buy a pizza while they're there.
So is there any question that LeBron James is a businessman?
Smart move, man.
Smart move. Are you kidding me? That was brilliant move by LeBron James. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He was not going to show up to Blaze Pizza in Culver City.
There's,
not taking anything away from Blaze Pizza.
There's always that chance, though. There's always that chance.
And if I was a diehard fan like these fans were, I get it. Roll the dice. Show up because you never know, right? But don't get mad at LeBron James if he doesn't show up.
Well, what it comes down to, at least you get free pizza.
Of course. Why not go?
It's a win. Maybe not a win-win, but it's a win.
And then if he did show up, it would be a story that you'd be telling for the rest of your life, right?
Yep.
Exactly. That does it here, right here on ESPN Upstate, The Huddle. It was Richmond Weaver and Lonzo here on Wednesday. We're back with you tomorrow. Greg McKinney is out on vacation. Straight Up with Sturge is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.